And g'day, Don. How are you?
Well, hello, Annie, and hello to all your listeners.
Yeah, well, I thought it was about time that we had a chat about the trials and tribulations of your work promoting the Yes Vote in Tasmania. Tell us about what's been going on for you over the last month. It's about a month, isn't it?
Yes, well, in some ways it's been longer than that, but because in early 2018, I was fortunate enough to be introduced to the detail, if you like, of the process leading up to the Uluru Statement and its content in a wonderful presentation by Thomas Mayo. And so I've been a supporter, although in some respects critical, of the Yes for several years. And of course, this year, just like everyone else who was a Yes supporter, and those who are wondering at the moment about whether they should become a Yes supporter, you know, I've been doing lots of more practical things to encourage people in the community to vote Yes. And that includes where I live these days, on the west bank of Kanamalulka, also known as Tamar River, where there are a set of small country towns who are, to some degree or another, perhaps beneath the surface of extent, quite visibly talking about the referendum to one degree or another.
Yeah, that's interesting. So you set up a stall, didn't you, at one of the local markets?
Yeah, well, we've been doing some basic education work using trying to get face-to-face conversation, and that happens in a number of ways, but that's included in a nearby town, having a stall in the shopping centre, and that has enabled us to get some face-to-face conversations, hang out leaflets and so on, all of the usual things that you do in a campaign to get some progressive development in the society. And, of course, when we go there, we go to the Exeter Market on Sunday, a decent group of us going there with a stall to talk with people to the extent they wish to, about why a Yes vote is so important.
So how did that group begin?
We got started just by those of us who were pro-Yes, just talking more and more with each other and building it out of that. And in Launceston itself, there's just as there is across many other regional cities and towns and so on, there is a very strong and growing Yes campaign. It's doing a terrific job, and all of it's through volunteer work.
I mean, everybody has this view. I mean, I'm in Melbourne, and people have this view of Tasmania as being basically a big country town. Is that your experience?
No, because I think that sort of reduces the character of the place, and it is a wonderful and exciting place to live. That's what I'm finding anyway. Constantly interesting. And, of course, one of its distinctive features is a very profound Aboriginal history that goes back, you know, 40 to 60,000 years, depending on what is known about various clan and nation areas. And that, of course, also includes that since Whitefella occupation, the British colonial occupation, which was established through one of the most powerful military campaigns ever seen on this continent, in the form of a regimental-based war that recruited paramilitaries to attempt to wipe out the Aboriginal population. And so that's a big part of Tasmanian history, and the more that you pay attention to it, you see the microcosm of all sorts of problems in our society as it stands at the moment. That includes people who are desperately trying to unveil the truth of all of that, but at the same time, people who remain in deep denial that it ever happened, that there was such destruction of life. Essentially, in all of that, in Tasmania, is just, you know, the notion that Aboriginal people and their society and their culture was wiped out is just not true. and it's been a popular mythology for some years, and it's breaking apart well and truly these days, primarily through the efforts of the descendants of the people who were living here at the time that whitefella occupation started.
I'll tell you something interesting. Someone told me this last week that, I mean, this is just a sort of an oblique thing, but H.G. Wells' War of the Worlds was apparently based on what happened to the Tasmanian Aboriginal people with the arrival of the Westerners. Did you know that?
That's an angle I've never heard of.
No, I know. It's the curious thing that someone told me last week, and I thought, well, yeah, it makes complete sense, really.
Worth checking out for the quiz nights, but really important stuff are books by Patsy Cameron, Auntie Patsy Cameron, and Cassandra Pybus recently with the new biography of Truganini, and then also the work of Henry Reynolds and others, and great literature, including going back to a book called The Crows by Russell Drew, that describes the whitefella attempt to colonial attempt to destroy Aboriginal culture, which failed.
And not to mention the great film The Nightingale.
Well, I think there's some dimensions of it all covered there. That's right. Yes, yes. But I think the interesting thing for me in my experience has been there's a number of angles. Firstly, the polling for me, I think, is quite calculated. And also, and it is calculated to rupture and undermine the confidence of the Yes campaign and of the people on the ground seeking to persuade a majority to vote yes. And I think that, you know, I don't know how big the effect of it is, because I see the Yes campaign growing and I see the No campaign running out of steam with 2 weeks to go. And I see this being very winnable, even though the polls are trying to convince us that it isn't. And I think Thomas Mayo yesterday said, it was a great statement, actually. He said something to the effect that whenever there is a struggle for the progressive development in society, doubt sits on your shoulder and what you have to do is ignore it. And I think he's dead right about that. We have to be more determined. Being hopeful is not enough. Being more determined than those who are organising the no nonsense is what it's all about for us in these last 2 weeks. Anecdotes or casual conversations, even though I've had dozens of them, of course, are not a really great scientific way to approach it.
No, it's called a straw poll, Don. It's called a straw poll.
My impression is that there is a prevailing ignorance in Australian society about the Constitution itself. And I think it is a serious problem and is going to continue after the referendum result. And it has serious implications, I think, for ongoing progressive left and socialist strategy, actually, that there is such ignorance. And that includes amongst yes voters. So, for example, I've had conversations with yes supporters who struggle to deal with the no argument that this change is divisive. They don't know until it's discussed that the inbuilt into the Constitution is a divisive race power already. Although the formulation in the Constitution can enable the Parliament to make laws that are the benefit of any particular race, accepting, you know, not just living with whether one likes to or not, the idea of whether the race is actually a valid concept, but that's, we have to deal with that.
Yeah, that's right.
But But what the Constitution enables is for a government to make laws that are racist and to make laws that are not racist and for the benefit of any particular race. And the only examples of where that's been able to occur, of course, have been when Liberal and National Party governments have sought to make racist laws that have been against the desires and interests of the majority of Aboriginal people involved.
That's exactly right.
And there are two big examples of that, the Hindmarsh Island affair and, of course, also the intervention.
Yeah, the intervention. I mean, and these laws that they put in cause people to die. It's an outrage. And it's funny, you know, because this idea that it's divisive, it's very reminiscent of the US strategy to say that it's undemocratic to have national health care. I mean, you know, you think it's an unarguable thing, but in actual fact, public relations firms can actually turn black into white and white into black, you know?
Yeah, polling helps to do that, as does the mainstream media, particularly the so-called progressive mainstream media like the ABC, which says that balance requires 50% airtime for both sides. And so that lifts once the no side had about the best 20% sympathy about 6 months ago. But that formula of equal time has given an enormous pickup. It's like, how dare they define balance as being a position that only had 10, 15, 20% support at the most should get the same amount of coverage as a group that has far more than that, majority support.
And this is an example that same example is climate denial, change denialism, which had 0.05% scientific backing. And the majority of evidence that it was true, I mean, like overwhelming, absolutely overwhelming. But then, oh no, the ABC must give equal time to both arguments.
It's a nonsense. It's basically Sky News TV, Sky News media methods being applied through the ABC. But there are two other points that I've been covering before we run out of time. The second thing is that another thing about the Constitution, as it stands, is that it already has provisions that give a voice to some parts of the population. The most important thing is the whole of the Constitution, in its entirety and in some particular details, gives the most powerful voice to the ruling class in the form of the major corporations and their owners. It is a class document, and it is such in general and in particular. So there is a thing in it, for example, that enables the Parliament to make laws relating to corporations. That's where the power, the rich and powerful, that's one particular aspect of the Constitution, which they have a voice which is far more powerful than any other part of the Constitution. Once upon a time, workers were provided with a limited voice through what was called the Constitution, the Conciliation and Arbitration Power. Now, it's a bit more complicated to go into in detail, but it's quite simple to understand if there's time. But so that particular access to a voice, as limited as it was, was of course replaced with working people having to somehow or other find a voice for themselves through industrial relations laws that became based on the constitutional, on the corporation's power, which was designed to advance the interests of corporations. So there is aspects of the voice that are of a voice that are available to other parts of the Constitution. And our Aboriginal people have every right and logically to struggle for a constitutional recognition that also has a practical effect. And that's what we see going on. The other angle that I think is quite interesting is that, and it's sort of linked to this ignorance about the Constitution, is that there is a strong perception there that a big part of the no voters are cohorts from within the working class, in particular low-income workers and their families, and also male tradespeople. I often run into conversations and even some commentary about that. The distinctive thing about that is that most of the polls don't tell us anything about that. I had a look at about 9 different polls at what they're saying about the class composition of whether people are voting yes or no. And just about all of them, but one, well, all of them except one, don't have anything to offer on that, except supposition and innuendo and so on. The Redbridge poll does make a modest effort to take that into account by looking, by polling for whether people are yes or no according to their income levels. And that tends to show, now, for low, it's hard to work out for male tradespeople because the range of incomes for male tradespeople is quite big, so I can't really make any decent comment about that. But for low-income people, the pointer is this, that for taking low-income people as anyone on an income below the median wage rate, that is the mid-level of wage rate, that's where most people are, that's the majority of the population, are below the median wage, is that the proportion of them who are fixed in a no position is less than, it's higher than we would like it to be, but it's less than for people who are in higher, on higher wage level. And the potential in that cohort of people below median wage to become yes voters from being undecided or soft no's is still quite strong. So we've got it. Anyone who is thinking that the problem is somehow in the, and I'm parodying it this way, the ignorant working class, needs to kick up the bum, because there is no evidence to say that that's valid. And the very modest evidence that is available says that it's probably not as true or as cut and dried as what.
Well, that's interesting, because it's very similar to the way the Liberals try to undermine the Labor vote by insinuating that One Nation was the purview of exactly the same cohort that you're describing.
Yeah.
And it blew up in their face.
That's true. Now, I'm not suggesting that there is no problem with those two parts of the working class, but what it's suggesting to me is that workers in the cohorts are still thinking about the issues in their own way, and it is quite possible for us who are in the yes camp to encourage and persuade them to vote yes on polling day. And I think that that's, you know, really where we're at, is how determined are we going to be in the next 2 weeks? And when we see that there are people from a progressive no camp who are reconsidering and even changing their mind, and from a critical point of view that is often, usually quite legitimate, saying that they're going to turn vote yes, is a pointer to what is possible. The more we talk, the more we learn ourselves about how to talk about the Constitution, I think can be very helpful in the, what I call the verbal judo that goes on in these face-to-face conversations. And it enables us to also break apart any tendency towards you know, a soft, if you not quite the right word, but a soft racist sort of no tendency that I think can be turned. Some of these things are discussed in a brand new article by Russell Morton in today's Saturday paper. He discusses some of this. But once again, his commentary is actually quite insightful in parts. But once again, it's based on his particular interpretation of polling and focus groups. And there is no information about those. And secondly, he ignores the fluidity of the class composition of those who are undecided, those who are soft no's, and those who are yeses. Mm-hmm. I think this is all this means for me is that I am confident, and I'm with Thomas Mayo on this. This is winnable, and what a great step forward it would be if we are able to help create the new platform from which working Aboriginal people and those who wish to act in solidarity with them and pursue a better deal for them and their children into the future. And, of course, for the rescue of country. Because more and more we are learning that Aboriginal traditions and culture have profound insights about the rescue of nature from the destruction of capitalist development. There are rich possibilities there. So I'll finish perhaps just with, I will actually quote the exact words from Thomas Mayo's speech in Newcastle yesterday. He says, "Ignore the shadow of doubt that might be sitting on your shoulder. They've been there whenever we have made progress. Believe in yourselves, your community, your country. We can and we will win this referendum. We can win that 30 to 40% who are undecided or soft no's in the next 2 weeks."
On that note, Don, thank you very much.
Thank you, and best wishes to all of you. Happy campaigning.